Please, face the talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark Fox is with us this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Barry. How are you today?
Doing great. Good to have you with us, Mark. Something big happens Tuesday. Tell us about it.
We're having a joint conference of the Tennessee Fire Chiefs Association and the Southeastern Association of Fire Chiefs here in Murfreesboro. It actually starts tomorrow, Saturday. We've got some pre-conference classes for a lot of the Tennessee folks that are National Fire Academy classes that are offered through our State Fire Academy here in Tennessee. And then that transitions into some pre-conference classes on Monday for the actual conference. And then in the Tuesday, the conference starts in earnest. Got about 250 fire officers and fire chiefs from across the Southeast registered for the conference so far. And so we're looking forward to hosting them here in Murfreesboro, as well as showing off our fire department in our city.
Now, this is the first time that the Southeastern chiefs have come to Murfreesboro, but you were telling me before the broadcast that several times the state chiefs have been here.
Yeah, this is the fourth consecutive year that we've hosted the Tennessee Fire Chiefs Association annual conference here in Murfreesboro, as well as we host some quarterly meetings here. The annual conference, the Embassy Suites, gives us the ability to house a lot of the exhibits, which include fire trucks and a lot of fire equipment inside the exhibit hall or the grand ballroom there at the Embassy Suites. So it makes it really nice for us because we can go inside, view the demonstrations and view the equipment, as well as have great, excellent speakers that come in for the conference. And so we're proud to have hosted that for the last 4 years and look forward to continuing hosting Tennessee Fire Chiefs in the year to come. And hopefully maybe in the future, Southeastern Association of Fire Chiefs will rotate back here as well.
This gives us a whole new look at fire departments. Like any other business, things do change. Technology improves things. And so you're able to see new technology. Is that right?
Yeah, we're able to see new technology in the exhibit hall and with the equipment that are being offered that's the latest innovations from all those manufacturers, whether it's our self-contained breathing apparatus that we use, our turnout gear, our equipment that we wear, to fire apparatus, to rescue equipment. All those kind of things will be represented in the exhibit hall. On those days, it gives us a real good look at technology. Additionally, a lot of the training that we get, especially with this conference being a regional conference with Southeastern Association of Fire Chiefs, the slate of speakers that we have for this conference and topics such as leadership and fire ground safety and other things like that are tremendous for us because it's nationally known speakers that are coming to us, providing a lot of educational opportunities for fire chiefs and fire officers from throughout the region.
One thing that I have found interesting in having you on the radio in the past is that things have changed dramatically, not just technology. That has changed to fit the needs of the present. But what you find in people's houses have changed, thus changing the way you fight fires.
Yeah. Of course, the nature of what you have in your homes, everything back in the 70s and even the early 80s were probably built out of wood or wood-related products, natural fiber such as cotton, you know, those type of materials. In the 80s, really started seeing a lot of synthetics being developed, and now most everything in your living room is probably made out of a synthetic material. So those synthetics actually produce so much more heat than natural products do. It creates an environment for us that's much more dangerous. It's much more dangerous for the homeowner. We really encourage everyone to have smoke alarms because that's really more than ever is a life-saving mechanism. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, if you encountered smoke inside of a home, it was mostly wood smoke or cotton smoke or something like that. It'd burn your eyes, burn your nose, but probably wouldn't kill you initially unless you inhaled a tremendous amount of it. The products that we have in our homes today are essentially plastics or hydrocarbons, the same thing that fuel or tires are made out of. And so the amount that we have of those in our home, the smoke that's created from those produces hydrogen cyanide, which can kill you in a breath or two breaths if you're in that smoky environment. And so that's the reason that we want to make sure that everyone has smoke alarms and treating those environments like they should and getting out of their homes immediately. Call out 911 from outside of their homes, and especially we don't want to have when anyone try to go back in to retrieve anything or rescue someone because without protection, you're just not going to survive that environment.
Now, you had mentioned it's a much hotter fire. Does that also cause more damage more quickly?
Yeah, it does cause more damage a lot more quickly, and it causes the fire to spread. Back in the 70s, when you do studies on legacy furniture, what we call legacy furniture now, made out of wood and cotton fibers and things like that, it would take around 28 to 32 minutes for a room to do what we call flashover, which means everything in the room is essentially combusting at the same time. Now those time frames are down to about 4 to 8 minutes. And for us as firefighters, our firefighters that are working every single day to protect someone, our average response time is right in that 3 to 4 minute range. And so we're arriving on the scene a lot of times right as that fire is ready to flash over now, whereas in the past we would be arriving on the scene and be able to put out that fire before it ever became a flashover situation. We're encountering a lot more of those situations with it burning much hotter, causing a whole lot more damage and spreading a lot faster because of the heat.
With today's homes and also condominiums and apartments, so many people have dwellings that are close to each other, sometimes with an airspace, sometimes a common wall. Is it more difficult to stop this type of a fire with a firewall or airspace?
The firewall construction that we have in place now and the current codes that we have, we really, with those codes, it gives us a lot of protection on preventing a fire going from one building or one apartment into another apartment or a townhome into another. Those firewalls do a tremendous job for us keeping that fire out. That's hopefully that firewall hasn't been impacted. So, you know, a lot of times you'll either double layer sheetrock or you have a masonry wall. If people have drilled through to run a cable TV cord or some other kind of cord or wiring through that for a security camera or otherwise, then that can compromise that firewall and increase the chances that that fire will spread to another building. But current fire codes that we have and the current construction that we're under really envelops a lot of those protective measures for homeowners and for our firefighters to compartmentalize those fires, which is really what we need to do.
So this type of discussion and topics is some of what you're going to be covering at the coming conference.
Yeah, some of those things we've learned in conferences past, and some of those topics will be brought up in this conference. Talk a lot about firefighter safety and what we can do to help firefighters and make them safe. A lot of leadership topics on developing leaders and things like that will be prevalent at this conference because it is a fire chief officer and officer level class is more or less for fire officers around the country.
If you're just joining us, our guest in this segment is Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark Faulx. Does tracking the evolution of what is in furniture today help you understand more clearly what firefighters might need to fight fires in the future?
Well, looking back on it, you kind of saw some of the evolution. You know, when I first started fighting fires back in 1990, you started seeing the prevalence of plastic telephones hanging on the wall instead of, you know, more of the metal dial-type telephones that we saw back in the day. Of course, our kids now wouldn't even know what that would look like. But seeing some of those plastic telephones drip down the wall and seeing those melted and realizing what those plastics are made out of kind of give you the thoughts of what is this going to go to when everything is synthetic in nature. A lot of research has been done by the National Institutes of Science and Technology, as well as the U.S. Fire Administration and other organizations that have really put the spotlight on all those products inside a home and how dangerous they are and things like that. Another thing that's kind of currently developing and what we're looking at more or less is treating fire scenes as more of a hazardous material scene because we're learning that the byproducts of the combustion of those plastic materials are also getting on our protective clothing. The fabric in the protective clothing, it can actually get on the firefighter's skin and be absorbed through the skin. And a lot of those are cancer causing. So we're learning a lot more about protecting our firefighters from cancer. We're developing procedures here in Murfreesboro about how to better protect our firefighters, how to treat a fire scene as more of a hazardous material scene and be able to decon our firefighters before we're getting back to the station and kind of cross-contaminating everything that's there with those contaminants that could potentially produce cancer.
As far as homes and businesses needing fire extinguishers, has that changed?
The ingredients with fire extinguishers really haven't. You've still got the dry powder, and then you got some of the other types of, in certain environments, you'll have extinguishers that are there to design to protect computer equipment, that more of your halon-type extinguishers. And then you've got some CO2 extinguishers that are designed in certain environments. I guess the big thing education-wise now, all those products still put out fire and do a very effective job of it, is that if the fire is very large whatsoever, we're encouraging people, don't try to put it out with the fire extinguisher. Get out of the building because of the dangers of the smoke that we now currently have. You know, in the past, you would have waste paper basket on fire that was probably a metal waste paper basket and would have paper and stuff like that in it. Now, instead, you've probably got a lot of plastic materials in that basket, and now the basket's plastic or made out of some kind of rubber material or something like that, and it's just much more dangerous of a situation to try to put out yourself.
So you need to get the fire department to you as quickly as possible. And again, how much time is it before that flashover?
That can happen within 4 to 8 minutes now. And
wow.
So it's a very short amount of time before everything in the room's reaching that heat level to where everything in the room combusts at one time.
I would guess that is where the sprinklers come in.
Yeah, the sprinklers do a great job of helping that because they keep the fire at bay. They limit the amount of smoke, of course, that the fire produces because they keep that fire very small in nature and will hold it at bay or, in some cases, completely extinguish the fire before it gets very large whatsoever.
I know Murfreesboro was one of the first to encourage sprinklers in homes. How is that going?
A lot of contractors that are building homes really don't normally regularly install them, but there's a lot more people that are asking about sprinklers in their homes and having those systems in place, and it's a great idea to have that.
Do you get a lowered insurance cost?
Typically, you will see a lowered insurance cost with the sprinklers.
Okay. While we're talking about insurance cost, and this ties in with this conference, because this conference, you see what's happening all over the Southeast. We are a number two ISO, which is phenomenal. I mean, there are not that many number twos. Your goal is to get us to number one. And as you look around the southeastern area, probably just a handful of fire departments are number one.
Yeah, there's probably about a dozen or so in the state of Tennessee, 10 or 12, that are actually a class one, maybe a little bit less than that. We're expecting to be evaluated again this fall. We're being told by the insurance service office, and we fully expect to become a class one fire department, which is, like you said, the best of the best. We additionally are seeking accreditation through Commission on Fire Accreditation International, which is an international accreditation that basically benchmarks your department and says, are the practices that your department is doing the best practices out there for high-performing fire departments? And we're looking forward to that process. We've been ongoing with that process for about the last 2 years now. It's going to culminate next summer in August of 2020. We will go before the commission to seek accreditation as a department. In August in Phoenix, Arizona is where we'll have to go to go before that commission. But we'll present our documents and present the proof that we're doing the right things and we're making moves toward the right measures to be the best fire department that we can be and seek accreditation. If we obtain accreditation and obtain the ISO 1 level rating both, we would be the first and only fire department in the state of Tennessee that is both accredited and ISO 1 in nature. And so that's a great compliment to what we would be able to accomplish for our citizens.
Very definitely. The leadership here is phenomenal, and you're right at the top, and we thank you for all that you do. Let me ask you this. What are some of the biggest things that have made this happen where we're on the doorstep of becoming a number one rated ISO?
Well, I think the biggest things are having your priorities straight. And our main priority is the focus on serving and protecting our citizens. And when you do that, you want to have the measures in place to have really quick response times. I think another component of that is the support we get from city council and the public in general. All of our citizens in Murfreesboro support our department very, very well. We have great equipment. We've got nice stations. We've got stations that are located where they need to be located, and we truly identify those things and really try to plan out, okay, where is the best location to put a fire station? Those are all components that go into the planning processes of becoming a great fire department and serving the citizens there. But the main thing has to be the focus on taking care of citizens at all costs and the focus on providing the best service that we can to them at whatever level they need it, whether it's an emergency medical response, responding to a car accident, responding to a fire in their vehicle, in their home, wherever it's at, being kind of that all-hazards department that's capable of taking care of just about any emergency that one of our citizens would come upon. Hopefully they don't, but, you know, in the case that they do and it becomes the worst day that they've had, maybe we're there to help make it a lot better. And with that being the focus, I think that's where a lot of that comes from and becoming that department is that singular focus.
Everyone listening, let's get ready to welcome the fire chiefs from across the Southeast to Murfreesboro this coming Tuesday.
Yeah, the main conference starts Tuesday. We've got a couple of classes that morning, and then that afternoon we've got a very in-depth opening ceremony and a memorial service that's going to be outstanding for the participants of the conference to witness. And then beyond that, we're going into having the classes, some keynote speakers. Dr. Dale Henry, who is from outside of Knoxville area, Roane County area, is going to be our first keynote speaker of the week, and he's a great speaker, nationally renowned speaker, and really looking forward to the education and the camaraderie, the networking with the other fire chief officers from across the country, because one of the best ways to learn about things to do is have that networking capability with other chief officers from around the country to learn their best practices.
Now, in talking with some of your friends who are chiefs in other places throughout the Southeast, not just Tennessee, what is their impression of Murfreesboro? Do they have an impression of Murfreesboro?
Oh, they most definitely have an impression of Murfreesboro, and bringing them here to see Murfreesboro and what Murfreesboro is about is going to be something that's great for us. But they definitely have an impression of our department. We have gone on several deployments in the past few years, two to South Carolina, one to Texas, to Gatlinburg for the fires that were there, and we're very widely known as a very progressive fire department, a great fire department across the Southeast, and it's great because that brings the acclaim back to the people that it should, which are the firefighters out working on shift and 24-hour shift and the great job that they do every day. But we're widely known across the Southeast.
Do other cities have facilities like the Doug Young Training Center that we have here?
Your larger cities typically do. Your Nashville's, Knoxville, Chattanooga, Memphis have large training facilities like that. We're very fortunate to be the size that we are to have that level of training center that we have and that we're continuing to develop, and it means a lot for us to be able to go over there. We're using that thing all the time. Our firefighters, our police officers, everybody is extremely excited about having something right here in the middle of the city that we can go to and train and get a lot of those practical components and make our personnel safer.
Did new laws from the Tennessee General Assembly give police power to firefighters?
Well, we've had police powers for years. The county fire chiefs and fire marshals had not had the same police powers that the city fire chiefs and some of the fire marshals had, and that's what that enactment of that legislation was, to give the county fire officials the same ability to have that. We've had police powers for several years as far as arson investigations and some of the scenes that we're on, maintaining control of that scene as far as the incident command structure and being in charge of mitigating that scene and making sure that everybody's safe and doing what they're supposed to do.
Because I guess we've heard that if it's an arson, the person who usually started it comes back and watches.
Sometimes that happens. Yeah, and we've got our Community Risk Reduction Division does a very good job of not only investigating arson fires, but doing cause and origin. They identify that. They gather evidence. They work with the police department on interviewing personnel and or the people that may be involved or witnesses or otherwise, and we really try to hammer those down. But the other part of what their job is and what they do that's great is fire cause and origin is something that's big. Even if it's not an arson fire, knowing what causes fires helps us prevent those fires in the future. And so that's a big component of what that division does.
You mentioned relocating current fire halls so that they can do a better job with the changing population of our community. A good example being the recent move of fire station number 4. So that it's equal distance to all areas that have buildings over 10 stories high. Plus, it's a great place for the swift water rescue team.
Yeah, we've got a lot of more additional water capabilities now with where that team is located, because the river is literally in their backyard. And so we have a pathway that our Public Works Department with the city helped us with. They went and kind of pushed down some trees and created a path for us. It's wood chips that go from that station down to the river and the greenway. So it both gives us the capability of getting below the Lowhead Dam that's located there next to the bridge on Medical Center Parkway. We can get into the river below that dam or above that dam and get all the way up to New Salem Highway, which is the other Lowhead Dam, and go all the way out to Walter Hill Dam from that one location and immediately get those boats in the water without having to take them to a trailhead or a point of access to the river somewhere else, haul them there, get them out there, and have to do all that. We can immediately get access to the water there. Additionally, we've also got capabilities of getting to the greenway. We've got a Polaris utility vehicle that we utilize for the greenway to respond to it for medical calls. If somebody were to fall and injure themselves on the greenway or have a cardiac event or anything like that on the greenway, we can access that from that point and get anywhere on the greenway in minutes from that station with that vehicle, and then quickly get that person transported out to a waiting ambulance at the closest trailhead.
Chief Fox, before this segment ends, how many people do you anticipate having at this Tuesday's conference?
We've got over 250 registrants for the conference, and between them and their spouses, we've got a spouse program for the spouses of the chief and chief officers that are coming to the conference, probably pushing 350 people for the conference, if not more.
Are there any fire safety thoughts you'd like to underline?
We really want to encourage everyone to have smoke alarms in their home, not to go back in their homes if something catches on fire. Call 911 from either a neighbor's house or their cell phone outside the home. We're going to get there as quickly as we possibly can and try to make sure that we handle that emergency, but it is extremely dangerous to go back into that environment.
Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark Folks with us this morning, and it's always great to have you with us, and really proud of all that the Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Department is doing to make this a safer community. Now, everybody, welcome these fire chiefs to town next week. Let them know when you see them at the area restaurants that you're proud to have them here in the heart of Tennessee. Give them a big welcome. And again, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you, Bart.
Stay with us. Another big thing happens. Tomorrow is a historical day dealing with Nathan Bedford Forrest and something he did. We'll find out more on that in just a moment.
Alrighty, thank you, Bart and Chief Mark Folks there, talking about some important information you might need to know, and part two of the Action Line, actually getting ready to get started here in just a second, as we welcome in Mary Beth Nevels and Jim Lewis to talk about an important day, July 13th, 1862, and how that pertains to some events happening tomorrow and through the weekend. More on that when we return.
The GNS in our call stands for Good Neighbor Station. That's been our objective since 1947. Now more than ever, count on WGNS.
Come by our store, Music World in Drummer's Den. We're a full-line music instrument store with well over 5,000 square feet packed with great instruments in every category. In guitars, we're your local dealer for the two top acoustic guitar brands in the world, Martin and Taylor. We've got the best selection and prices anywhere in the state of Tennessee on these. This is Dave Kivenemy at Music World and Drummer's Den in Murfreesboro, 2762 South Church Street, across from Indian Hills Golf Course.
My family and I had the luxury recently to travel to Italy, and one of the places that we ate at, they served a pesto Alfredo, which was out of this world. And as I tasted it, I said, this is something that Demas's can do. We immediately started working on it, and now we introduce a new item to our menu, which is our pesto Alfredo. The flavor of it is out of this world. It is so good. Try our pesto Alfredo. You can fall in love with it as well. This is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurant at 1115 Northwest Broad Street.
Broadcasting to every nook and cranny of Rutherford County's 618 square miles. FM 100.5, 101.9, and AM 1450.
Alrighty, folks, Nick Cohn with you here on this Friday of July 12th, and we are opening up the second half of the Action Line this morning with Mary Beth Nevels, Education Director, and Jim Lewis, Stones River Battlefield Ranger. How are you guys this morning?
Great.
Doing
thank
well.
You.
Good morning.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being here today. We want to open things up with a little bit of a description of what happened and why we're celebrating and remembering the day, July 13th, 1862. Jim, if you would, tell us a little bit about that day.
Okay, well, on that date, which is coming up, the 157th anniversary of it tomorrow, is really when the Civil War hits Murfreesboro with a vengeance. I mean, certainly the folks in Murfreesboro had been experiencing the war through Union occupation prior to that, but on that date, General Nathan Bedford Forrest, leading a brigade of some five cavalry regiments, will come thundering into town. And over the course of the day, he will end up forcing the surrender of the Union garrison here, hold the town briefly, and then have to leave. But he will do some destruction to military stores and the railroad and whatnot. So although a smaller battle compared to what would come later in 1862 with the Battle of Stones River, it was a fight that would have a fairly large impact. It actually is part of a series of events that will stall the Union's effort to try to take Chattanooga during that summer of 1862 and kind of set the stage for a whole different way of the war unfolding.
Our guests this morning, Jim Lewis and Mary Beth Nevels. If you want to call or text, since we're a little shorter on time this morning, text us at 615-893-1450 with any questions or comments you might have. I'm going to turn it over to Mary Beth Nevels now to talk about what's going on tomorrow. As we mentioned, the 157th anniversary. It's amazing that so long ago, yet such still an important piece of history. What's going on tomorrow and through the weekend?
Well, we're always excited when we're able to work with our friends from the battlefield. And with this being a Saturday, it was a great opportunity to partner with the anniversary being on a Saturday. The Rangers will be on site at Oaklands all day, and we've got some things planned. The mansion will be open for self-guided tours for $5 all day from 10 to 4. And then throughout the day, there's a program schedule, and you'll be able to find the program schedule on both of our websites, the Battlefield and Oaklands, and also on our Facebook pages. But at 11 o'clock, the Battlefield will present a program on the lawn, and Mr. Lewis can tell you more about that. And then at 11:30, we have a special band concert by Old Town Brass Band. And then we'll take a break for lunch, and we'll start back over at 1 o'clock with the same programs.
Fantastic. If you would dive a little bit more into, she was mentioning, for the first event.
Yeah, the opening events at the morning and afternoon at 11 and 1 will be a living history demonstration. We have some of our park volunteers will be out portraying members of the 9th Michigan Infantry, which were literally encamped on the lawn of the Manny's home, Oaklands. In fact, the programs will be happening pretty much where the camp was and where a fair amount of the fighting in that sector of the raid literally took place. And I'll be out there in my Ranger uniform and giving a program along with those demonstrations, focusing on the account of the raid that comes from a Sergeant Charles Bennett of the 9th Michigan Infantry. So we'll be hearing it straight from the horse's mouth, and people will be able to kind of envision that right there where it literally happened.
And this could be a cool opportunity for maybe parents to bring their kids along for a little bit of a history lesson, but this is something you can kind of do all day. You mentioned it kind of starts in the morning and goes through the evening, so you know you can make a whole day out of this on Saturday.
Yeah, the programs, like I said, they'll repeat in the afternoon. So if you have plans in the morning and you can't come in the morning, then you can make it after lunch and see the programs as they repeat again.
Fantastic. You mentioned some of the buildings in the area had been, you know, in the middle of the battle had got destroyed and lots of damages. Any buildings in particular that are still standing today that you'd want to mention? Or I mean, it was happening kind of right here in our backyard.
As far as the raid goes, I mean, obviously the reason we wanted, you know, one of the reasons we're doing what we're doing with our friends at Oaklands is, in fact, that is one of the center points of the raid activity. In fact, the 9th Michigan will surrender there. It's a strange story about you have two regiments in this town. They don't particularly like each other, so they're actually camped a mile apart, and that kind of helps Forrest out a little bit to not have to take on everybody at the same time. Mm-hmm. But folks, you know, when you're talking about the raid, the other building that stands today that is still, you know, that is, speaks to that is, of course, the courthouse. A detachment, one company of about 40-some-odd men, and Captain O.C. Rounds, who was acting as the provost, the kind of the military policeman of the town at the time, were stationed in the courthouse. And so while fighting was going on at Oaklands, you know, Forrest is cavalry, so he can move around very quickly and get men in different places at different times. He'll also be attacking Rounds and forcing his surrender at the courthouse. And the 3rd Minnesota, the other regiment, was actually out where the Murphy Estate was, for whom our town is named. That house no longer stands today, but so he'd be fighting essentially 3 separate engagements throughout the town in order to force the surrender here.
Wow. Yeah, such a cool piece of history, and they were right in the thick of the action right here on the square, but, you know, just a couple miles up is Oakland's mansion. So, I mean, it all happened right here, which I think is just very fascinating to kind of look and you know, look out the window, but picture a completely different time almost 160 years ago. If you guys would both just kind of talk on your own personal level to what the importance of remembering days like this are. You mentioned 5 years ago was the last time that you guys had done something like this. But why is it important to remember these days, and what does that mean to you?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know, these folks that were part of this stage in our history, I mean, you know, the Civil War, for one, I mean, one of the reasons it still gets talked about, debated, argued about, is in fact it is a formative period in our nation's history. I mean, a lot of what we are today, for good or ill, comes from that moment in time that our nation suffered through. And then for events like this that really, really hit to the heart of how the folks here locally would deal with, you know, these issues that are ultimately going to have ripple effects nationally, I think is very important. I mean, you said it was, you know, kind of neat that stuff was happening here. I'm not sure the Mannies agreed with that, having a battle basically rage out in their front yard. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, you've got, you know, moms and children that were living through this, and, you know, you also have to think about that and the scars that had to have been left behind.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to ask you guys as well, Uncle Dave Making Days is coming up this weekend. You mentioned, I'll let you kind of take this one, there's a really cool shuttle opportunity for folks who want to maybe do both. Maybe you're going to be at Uncle Dave Making Days but want to check out you know, what you guys have going on. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we love when we're able to get involved with Uncle Dave Making Days. Last year, actually, Oakland's had a booth over on site, and we really enjoyed getting to talk to people as they came through. But this year, one of the sponsors of Uncle Dave Making Days is the Villages, and they have a bus that we have been able to arrange for Jenna Foster Cannon, our director of cultural and heritage tourism here in Rutherford County, is going to be a step-on guide on the bus, and the bus will pick up folks at Uncle Dave Making Days and drive them through town and bring them to Oakland's, and they can get off the bus and partake in some of the programs and activities of the day and then get back on and get back over to the festival. So that's a free shuttle service that might give you a little break in the heat of the afternoon. I think it's going to be in the afternoon hours tomorrow, and I'm sure that they'll have signs on where to get on the bus and then where you'll be dropped back off.
I believe it's supposed to run from 12:30 to 3, the shuttle back and forth. So awesome. That'll bring it there for our afternoon slate of programs.
Very cool. We're going to take a quick time out, and speaking of this weekend and the weather, we're going to take a look at that weather and traffic, and we'll be right back. Our guest this morning, Mary Beth Nevels, Education Director, and Jim Lewis, Stones River Battlefield Ranger. If you want to give us a call or text, 615-893-1450. Any questions or comments, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting from the tallest tower in the city with that little red light on top. FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450.
This is Kim Dunaway from Sunshine Nutrition Center. You hear me on Monday mornings at 7:20 talking about how to lead a healthier lifestyle. We carry supplements, personal care, and grocery items at both our Murfreesboro and Smyrna locations, family owned and operated since 1989.
The Daikin Fit from Precision Air. For your home's heating and air system, no money down and financing starting as low as $89 a month. Call Precision Air, 615-834-3777. Online at precisionairtn.com.
We'll see a few scattered showers and thunderstorms here for this afternoon with partial sunshine developing a high around 90 degrees and winds out of the north around 5 to 10 miles per hour. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Vujicic on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 73.
Good morning. Traffic still holding up right now on 24 as you make your way towards Nashville. A lot of radar out here this Friday morning. Slow it down. Same goes for the traffic there over on 840 towards Franklin, Williamson County. Just busy out here up and down sections of Las Casas Pike, and also still heavy at times. 231 coming from Shelbyville. Hey, if you're buried in credit card debt or student loan debt from the past, learn how you can reduce that debt down to a fraction of what you owe. Call 1-800-380-4293. I'm Commander Chuck. You're on time traffic.
Bazing at First National Bank of Murfreesboro gives a new meaning to pushing the bar on customer service.
First National Bank of Murfreesboro's Bazing offers discounts on medicine and doctors.
I saved on my eye doctor's exam and the glasses, too.
Look how much I saved at the drugstore.
Hearing services as well.
First National Bank of Murfreesboro, 2230 Mercury Boulevard. This is Freedom Wiggin from First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC.
Alrighty, we are back, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to News Radio WGNS. This is, of course, the Action Line. I'm Nick Cohn with you on this Friday, July 12th. Our guest this morning, Stones River Battlefield Ranger Jim Lewis and Education Director Mary Beth Nevels. How are you guys?
Great.
Doing great.
Alrighty, so I wanted to ask you about the band. You mentioned there was a brass band. Is there any significance to that, why you chose them? Talk about that a little bit.
Well, one, we've had the park, Stones River National Battlefield, has had a relationship with this particular group, the Old Town Brass. They've done some programs for us in the past. They are professional musicians who also then, from time to time, will put on the garb of the Civil War and portray a military band using the period style over-the-shoulder instruments. When you see a trumpet today, it faces forward. But when you played one in a military brass band, the bell went over your shoulders. So you were up front and playing, and the people behind you marching could hear you. So it was kind of a neat thing. But the reason we chose to bring them in here and include music in this event is that among the men of the 9th Michigan Infantry that would ultimately be captured by Nathan Bedford Forrest were the members of the 9th Michigan's regimental band. They were here. In fact, we just did a post on our Facebook page. When the 9th Michigan came into town in April to become part of the garrison, there was a ceremony here at the town square where they raised the American flag over the courthouse, and the 9th Michigan played patriotic tunes as part of that. And we know from other accounts that that shared connection to music, whether you're North or South or pro secession or not, they would actually help kind of during the lead up to when the raid would happen, perhaps smooth over some of the tensions by sometimes performing concerts and stuff that both soldiers and civilians would then be able to enjoy with the music they shared. So it seemed a perfect opportunity to combine a little music into that story as well.
That's pretty cool. Music, I think, is still doing that. And as far as, it's universal. Everybody can like a band, whether you got different opinions on other things. Music is a universal thing that everyone
draws us together.
So you mentioned the instruments going over the back of their shoulders. Now, is the folks behind them could hear when they're marching, or is that also a comfort thing? Because if you're walking holding a trumpet, that could probably be
the other thing, too. Yeah, because somebody's horns are pretty big. It's everything from a baritone or tuba.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys have invested all kinds of money and stuff. These instruments they'll be playing for the most part are from that period.
Do folks need to show up at a certain time to hear the band, or are they going to be off and on through the day?
They'll be going at 11:30 and 1:30, basically. Okay. Once we get done with the living history demonstration and program telling the story of the fight there, then we'll move into the music portion of the program, and their concerts will last probably between 45 minutes and an hour.
Awesome.
And what a great tie-in with Uncle Dave Making Day. So it's just a weekend full of music.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just fit perfectly with that.
Awesome. I wanted to ask you, Mary Beth Nevels, this next question, to talk about Oakland's Mansion a little bit and just the overall, what does it mean? What is it there for? What is it for folks who may not be as familiar? I know we're talking about it this morning as a site for a battle, but talk about the history and the whole of the Oakland's Mansion, if you would.
Well, it's a house and a home, and even when you walk through today, we want it to feel like a home. The Manny family obviously established it in the early 1800s and continued to build onto it until you see it today. It was completed just prior to the Civil War, the Italian style. They had the Manny family, both the first family and the second family, had large families, 8 kids. So there were a lot of children running around. And then we had several other families that lived at Oakland. So the story doesn't stop with the Civil War. We continue into the Darrow family, the Roberts family, the Jeton family. All of those families had impacts. And we are still trying to learn more about their stories and what their life was like. The story of the house doesn't stop. It continues even through today. This year is actually the 60th anniversary year of the house becoming a museum. When the 10 ladies saved it from being torn down, the bulldozer was already parked in the front yard, and it was ready to be raised to continue building housing. And so we're celebrating the 60th anniversary this year of those 10 ladies rallying their friends and raising money through yard sales and bake sales, and you know, they were selling hot dogs at festivals and antique shows. And this has been a fun year of getting back out a lot of those black and white photos and seeing how far that we have come and the work that still continues.
And you had mentioned you're going to be doing tours this weekend on Saturday.
Yes.
What about the rest of the year? Are there times where folks can come check out the Oaklands Mansion, other events I'm sure that they could get into?
Yes. Well, the house is open year-round for tours. It's Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4, Sundays 1 to 4. And we do have a general admission price for just a regular tours. Tomorrow will be special. We'll be doing some self-guided tours so that you can walk through and spend as much time in the house. We have signage, but we will have tour guides throughout the house that are happy to talk to you and answer questions. And then we do have activities throughout the year. For sure, follow us on Facebook. We have fun events. In September, we've got Oktoberfest, which is a craft beer festival on site. In October, we spook the house up for Halloween and do flashlight nights, and that's really a fun family event. You know, sometimes our events, you know, we're steeped in history, but you know, it's nice to be able to have that fun aspect. And flashlight nights is our fun night.
I think it'd be like a haunted house kind of experience.
Well,
it's so old and being there.
It is. Well, it doesn't take. It's just a creepy old house, so it doesn't take much. But we turn the lights down and we put up some Halloween decorations, and that's a fun night and something that we can give to the community. So those are fun. And then of course, then we get into Christmas and decorate for the holidays.
Awesome. As we mentioned, if you guys have comments or questions, you could text at 615-893-1450 or give us a call. Seems like this time in the morning people are more text savvy. But somebody was asking, have you guys ever considered doing a reenactment type of event? Now, this isn't exactly a reenactment, although very educational. They're asking if you guys have ever or have ever thought about doing
well,
something like
that. Well, speaking for the park, reenactments are, you know, at Stones River National Battlefield, the answer is no, because it's actually a violation of Park Service policy.
Okay.
We do not recreate battle events, simulate casualties. This is where young men actually died. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go out there and play war. It's, you know, to some extent, wouldn't be really the proper way to commemorate what they did. Mm-hmm. We also have a fair number, when we fire weapons, we have a number of safety guidelines that we must follow. And you could not do that in a sense of a reenactment with opposing forces. So that being said, I do believe that the 150th anniversary, Oaklands did actually try to do a bit of a reenactment over there. But there again, it's a very small space, you know, safety-wise. Mm-hmm. You've got a neighborhoods all around you. It would be a very difficult thing for even them to do on any kind of grand scale at all. We like to do more what we're doing here, where we will bring the weapons out. We'll be dressed as the soldiers. We use the firing of those weapons as a way to hook people into a human story. And then, you know, in this case, it'll be the men of the 9th Michigan Infantry there right where they fought and ultimately surrendered.
You know, the first time that I ever really heard the story, it was from Jim Lewis doing a program. And once he gets going in his program, he can just draw you in, and you can visualize it. And then once you get the sounds of the gunfire, the smells, and it really, and especially being on site, it is a great educational opportunity to really get that feel for the activities and the things that happen.
Awesome. Well, thanks. Good answer. And thanks for clearing that up for our listeners. We got a couple minutes left, about 3 minutes. With us, Stones River Battlefield Ranger Jim Lewis and Education Director Mary Beth Nevels. If we could recap what's going on tomorrow, the times, the prices. And again, you mentioned there's a shuttle in accordance with Uncle Dave Macon Days. So if folks are at Uncle Dave Macon Days, they want to come by and check out, they can do that.
And the shuttle is available in the afternoon, I think 12:30 to 3:30, and there should be signage over at Uncle Dave to help you figure that out if you're in town for the festival. The mansion itself will be open from 10 to 4. Self-guided tours, $5. Everything outside is free, open to the public. You can come and stay as long as you want to. The programs with the Rangers are at 11 and 1. The programs with the bands are at 11:30 and 1:30.
All righty. Any final thoughts this morning?
No, I just hope all folks come out and join us. Like I said, it was just this confluence of having a Saturday that happens to be the day that, you know, this event played out 157 years ago. Plus, we're going to be on at least one of the sites where, you know, these events that, you know, really shook Murfreesboro to its core. Like I said, this is, you know, this is when the war really begins to hit home in Murfreesboro. And, of course, for the folks here, once this thing is over, they might have maybe breathed a bit of a sigh of relief and thought, okay, phew, man, that's our Civil War thing. But then, lest we forget, come December of 1862, things are going to get a whole lot worse when a really big battle of the Civil War will rage, you know, just down the outskirts of town here. And so the story will not come to an end. In fact, it will continue to ramp up for folks here.
All righty. Well, I'm excited. I hope to see you guys out there. Hopefully a number of our listeners join you guys as well. A great day tomorrow. Head on down to Oakland's Mansion. Great educational information. And, of course, it's going to be a lot of fun. Good weather in store for us tomorrow, it's looking like, as well. So thank you guys so much for joining us this morning. I'll see
you
tomorrow.
Thank you.
All righty. All right, folks. It is Friday. The Truman Show coming up next. We got live music for you, so stick around for that. We'll be right back. You're listening to News Radio WGNS. Don't forget, Good Neighbor of the Day, the Birthday Club Swap and Shop, all that information from this morning's show up online. Check that out, WGNSradio.com.
News Radio WGNS Murfreesboro, the voice of Rutherford County and the flagship station for Blue Raiders sports. The courthouse clock shows it's 9 o'clock. From the WGNSRadio.com News Center, a local news update with Ron Jordan.
Fire chiefs from across the Southeast will be in Murfreesboro this weekend and next week. Free conference classes will be held at the Embassy Suites Hotel and Conference Center this weekend, along with leadership training sessions starting Tuesday. Murfreesboro Fire Chief Mark Folks explains.
We're having a joint conference of the Tennessee Fire Chiefs.